The World Health Organization estimates air pollution kills 7 million people worldwide every year, and 9 out of 10 people breathe air containing high levels of pollutants. We're looking at what a warming planet is doing to our health on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Dr. Jonathan Patz thinks about this a lot as the director of the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. He is a professor and the John P. Holton Chair in Health and the Environment. He was a lead author for the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for over a decade. That's the organization that shared the Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore in 2007. Dr. Patz, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Kate, it's a pleasure to be here. Thank you.
So what do we get when we frame climate change as something about us, a public health issue, as opposed to focusing on polar bears, as a focusing on rising sea levels or increasing temperatures?
Well, that's a great question, and I've been working on that for more than two decades. Climate change, it's real, it's here, it's today. Most importantly, it's not just affecting the polar bears, it's affecting us and our health. And there are so many pathways through which climate affects our health, from direct effects of heat waves to stagnant air masses and worsening air pollution, extremes in the water cycle, so more floods, more droughts, and more fires, malnutrition, and effects on infectious diseases, especially those carried by insects like mosquito-borne Zika virus or dengue fever. So there are so many ways that climate affects our health that I personally view this as the largest environmental public health crisis of our times.
Do you think that focusing on the repercussions of climate change hitting us, impacting human health, does that help people get a better handle on the issue and maybe take it more seriously?
I do. I think everyone cares about the health of themselves and their children and grandchildren. And I think that there's much more common ground when you understand that climate change is about us. It's about our health. The faces of climate change are not those of just endangered species, which I think are very important in themselves, but the fact that when you see that climate change can exacerbate asthma and problems with children or infectious diseases and malnutrition. This is something that we must understand. Climate change is about our health.
We always hear that climate change affects people who are marginalized more than it impacts those who have more money, more resources, and that countries doing the most polluting aren't going to bear the brunt of climate change. What have you found in your research about how that works?
Interesting question. I'd say yes and no. Yes, absolutely, that those most vulnerable are also the least responsible for causing the problem. The industrialized countries have been, the United States is the number one responsible country for today's climate change with all of our greenhouse gas emissions from burning fossil fuels. Climate change affects all of us. And in a globalized world, increases in climate-sensitive diseases anywhere in the world affects everyone. But that it is true that, you know, people that don't have shelter, exposed to more of the extreme climatic conditions, and people that have diabetes or no air conditioning, these people are at higher risk. And the World Health Organization estimates that more than 80% of climate change-related diseases will affect children.
What do we know about countries that are the worst polluters, and what parts of the world have experienced the most negative consequences of climate change?
Well, certainly when you think about developing countries that have lots of diarrheal disease and poor sanitation conditions, these are countries that are already suffering. Places that have malnutrition, it's estimated that the 800 million people around the world at risk of climate change, at risk of malnutrition, that number will double by mid-century simply from the effects of warming temperatures on crops and crop yields. Places that have malaria is a very sensitive disease to climate shifts. these are places that are already seeing more increases in disease. But don't forget that we're not immune to this. And in Wisconsin, for example, it's warmed 1 degree Fahrenheit already since the 1950s. Our ragweed pollen season has lengthened almost more than 2 weeks. So there are places, you know, in the wealthy countries that are also going to be hit by climate change and effects on ill health.
We're talking with Dr. Jonathan Patz. He is the director of the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. Gathering your questions on climate change and public health, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Have you dealt with health consequences related to pollution or climate change? What's your story? What do you think can be done to deal with public health issues related to climate change, like insect-borne disease, water contamination, and air pollution? 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dr. Patz, as you look at climate change and the impact on human health, what about the potential impact on mental health? How does climate change have an impact on someone's mental health?
Yes, this is something that we've been looking at more and more recently. It's a big issue when you think about storm disasters and post-traumatic stress syndrome. Last year, we had 16 extreme weather disasters in the United States. Hurricane Maria that hit Puerto Rico killed somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000, although the official count was only 64, but the studies show somewhere between 3,000 to 5,500 deaths. So the trauma from these disasters is enormous. And then the concern about, simply young people thinking about, growing up in a world that's plagued by climate change and the disasters that emerge, this is causing some anxiety.
So recently, about 24 scientists, they reviewed thousands of peer-reviewed scientific papers. They were looking at climate change and its impact on human health and food supplies and water and a whole bunch of things. And that was published in the journal Nature Climate Change. I'm just wondering, why did they need to go back through all of this research and try to look at climate change and quantify and assess and compartmentalize its impact in so many different areas?
Yeah, great question. And I think the essence is that some of the indirect effects can be larger than the obvious ones. So, for example, we know that people die in heat waves. And in the United States, heat waves are getting more frequent and longer, on average 4 days longer than they were back 40 years ago. And we know that people die in heat waves. But what about drought disasters that destabilize populations already on the edge? It's been shown that right before the Syrian Civil War, there was the worst drought in the instrumental record, and it forced rural to urban migration rates 4 to 5 times higher than normal into the cities in Syria. There were food price shocks, there were riots in the streets. So some of these indirect effects that can be destabilizing of an entire population need to be recognized. So when you look at climate change effects on health, you can't just look at single exposure, dose response, and count the numbers. You need to look at a lot of the cross-sectoral indirect effects that could be enormous when you add them up. And that's why that study was conducted, to look at all of the ways and the intricate ways in which climate change can affect us.
Let's bring in Mike now, joining us from DeForest. Mike, hi. What are your thoughts?
I have heard or read somewhere that, like, during the Wild West days, there was malaria up as far north as St. Louis. Anything to that? And hot weather?
Thank you, Mike. Yeah, malaria.
Yeah, that's a great question. That's a question that's come up before, and it's all about the biological system that includes the mosquito that carries malaria. And it's something called the vectorial capacity. And the vectorial capacity of Anopheles mosquitoes in the United States was back then just barely above 1, which means that one infected person can lead to one more case. and so on. In places like Africa, where you've got tropical climates, the vectorial capacity is so high because of climatic conditions that if you do some environmental changes and drain a few swamps, you still have malaria. And so in the United States, when we just barely had malaria, it was very easy to eradicate it. So that's the difference between places in the tropics versus in temperate climates regarding vector-borne diseases like malaria.
How prone are we to a malaria outbreak here in the U.S. today?
Another great question. You know, these vector-borne diseases are very sensitive to small changes in climate. And so when people say, look, you live in Wisconsin, it's 10 below zero in the winter and it's 90 degrees in the summer, who cares about 1 or 2 degrees shift in temperature? If you have a mosquito-borne disease, a half a degree or 1 degree increased warming can make a difference in transmission. And in many cases, it's the warmer temperatures that are causing higher epidemics. And so it's all about the parasite inside the cold-blooded mosquito. You change whatever the air temperature is, that's the body temperature of the mosquito. So a small shift in temperature can have a huge change in the transmission dynamics of mosquito-borne diseases.
We're looking at the human health consequences of climate change here on The Morning Show. Dr. Jonathan Patz is our guide. He directs the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. Gathering your questions, your insights, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you have health problems that are connected to pollution or climate change? What do you think can be done to deal with public health issues related to climate change, like insect-borne disease, water contamination, and air pollution? You can call in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back in a minute on the Ideas Network.
In the WPR weather forecast for today, cloudy skies, some flurries possible across central and southern Wisconsin with gusty winds, highs in the 30s with temperatures falling through the afternoon. Clearing off on Wednesday, a few flurries in the north, breezy and highs from the upper teens to low 20s. On Thursday, partly sunny with highs in the low to mid 20s. And Friday, increasing clouds, snow developing from north to south with some light accumulations possible in the north, highs in the 20s and 30s.
Coming up, the number of Americans who volunteered last year jumped by almost one quarter compared to a couple years ago. After 7, we look at new national data on volunteerism and how Milwaukee is a leader in lending a hand. About 24 scientists reviewed more than 3,000 peer-reviewed scientific papers. They were looking at climate change and its impact on human health, on our food supplies, water, the economy, infrastructure, security. The work was published in the journal Nature Climate Change in November, and it's been billed as one of the most comprehensive assessments of how humanity is being impacted. Dr. Jonathan Patz is our guide to this conversation. He directs UW-Madison's Global Health Institute, and he was a lead author for the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for more than a decade. Your questions on the climate crisis, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Are you managing a health problem that has a direct correlation to polluted air or climate change? What are you doing on an individual level to cope with climate change and to stay healthy? You can call in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Dr. Patz, before we move into looking at solutions, you wanted to make mention of Zika and mosquitoes. Where are we with that and climate change?
Yeah, the prior caller asked about malaria, and I just wanted to point out that the El Nino of 2015 and 16 was one of the strongest in history, and the extreme temperatures were so high in Brazil and Colombia. There were some studies done on the effect of that temperature on the mosquito that carries dengue fever and Zika virus, and it was found that those temperature conditions were the most favorable for transmission in the last 60 years. So I think that that extreme El Nino event may have been in part responsible for the rise of Zika virus in South America.
So as we are looking at climate change and what to do about it, a lot of times we look to fossil fuels, we look to transportation. How are you looking at solutions here?
Well, when you think about the primary cause of climate change, it's burning fossil fuels. And that causes the greenhouse gases that warm up the planet. But also, when you burn coal and oil and gas, you release dangerous pollutants that we know harm people, especially the fine particles, PM2.5, that kill 7 million people, according to the World Health Organization, every year. In the United States, almost 100,000 people still die, even though we have the Clean Air Act. So if you can get to a low-carbon economy and get off of coal and oil, you'll have not only mitigating effects on climate and stabilize the Earth's climate, but you'll have immediate health benefits through cleaner air. And also, if we design cities for people rather than just motorized vehicles, you'll promote more physical activity. So there are some immediate gains. You know, it's important for people to realize climate change, it's real, it's here, but the solutions to get to a low-carbon economy could be the greatest health opportunity of our times. I mean, think about chronic diseases like diabetes, heart disease, and cancer. These are related to the physical activity is one thing, as well as diet. 60% of Americans don't even meet the minimal levels of recommended exercise. So here's a golden opportunity to solve the climate problem, but at the same time have these health co-benefits immediately.
What have you found in your research on switching out short car trips for biking?
Well, we found that just that small intervention of taking short bike trips that are, you know, less than 2.5 miles and only in metropolitan areas in the upper Midwest, the 11 largest cities in the upper Midwest, would save about 1,300 lives every year and $8 billion in avoided mortality and health costs. So, you know, swapping tailpipes for pedals, small intervention and huge health benefit. And these types of studies have been repeated around the world with many benefits there.
Let's go to Jess now, joining us from La Crosse. Jess, hi, go ahead.
Hi. So my question was, with like the rise in global temperatures, have we seen an increase in the amount of cases of Lyme disease from deer ticks in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, that's a tough question. It's a great question. Lyme disease is a vector-borne disease, and therefore the tick, which is a cold-blooded insect, is responsible for transmission. It's sensitive to the climate. But it's a complicated story with Lyme disease, thinking about land use change, deforestation, hunting and deer. And I have to say that it has been found that Lyme disease is shifting northward into Canada, especially into deciduous forests in Canada. So there's a discernible change in the geographic distribution of Lyme disease moving north. But in Wisconsin and Minnesota, it's a very complex situation. Hard to answer that one.
Let's go to Victor now with a question in West Allis. Victor, hi.
Hi. Good evening, Congressman. A little quick history. I'm 73 years old. In 1968, it was not unusual to get like 25 below zero last season for 4 or 5 days. Also, what was consistent is the weather change, that on New Year's Eve, you can have sub-zero weather or 18 inches of snow, which closed down a lot of events. But I noticed the change started in 1980, where you didn't have these kind of severe weather. What's your opinion on that?
So that's a great question. That I leave that for the climatologists, people like John Magnuson, who have studied the shortening freezing season, and Lake Mendota here has been frozen over far fewer, like 25% less than it used to be. One important message, though, is that to remember that global climate change is global, and that the Arctic is warming twice as fast as the rest of the world. So as the globe is warming, we are still going to be seeing some weird climate, especially as the Arctic warms up and the polar vortex, the jet stream, deviates more and more. So we'll be seeing warming, but we'll also be seeing extreme cold temperatures, as we did in 2012, when the polar vortex swept way down into Atlanta, Georgia, and those areas. So don't just look outside the window and locally to say, aha, it's warm or it's cold. We have to recognize this is a global average issue that we're going to be seeing plenty of cold temperatures, but in general, the Earth is warming, and that's going to be more problematic as we move into the future.
Dr. Patz, how do you get movement from people and policymakers to look at climate change in a more urgent way, particularly since the biggest culprits, including the U.S., don't have to perhaps deal with the biggest consequences right now?
Well, I think, you know, you have to look at how many ways climate change can affect an area and focus in on those specific regions. For example, Chicago, we looked at the combined sewage overflow events that happen when you have extreme rainfall, and we found you'd have a doubling in these events because of extremes of the water cycle. And so that people need to recognize that climate will affect them in many ways. Our trout streams are threatened, and people care about trout. And of course, the other thing is when we think about how do we act on climate change, we think, well, we'll just adapt to it. Let's turn on the air conditioners. We just did a study that showed that if our electricity comes from 30% coal, in the eastern United States, when you turn on the air conditioners for predicted increases in heat waves, you're going to kill an extra 1,000 people from the pollution from those being sourced by dirty coal. So those are things that really need to be thought about. As far as getting movement at the policy level, you know, even though our federal government is sort of stalling out on the issue, there are there's the compact of mayors, there's the C40 cities, We Are Still In, that's more than 150 million Americans on board, and $10 trillion of our U.S. economy talking about, you know, climate change, it's real, we need to take it seriously. Healthcare systems, healthcare without harm, and green hospitals are coming on board. So lots is happening at the local level, and I think people just not have to realize that, you know, the scientific debate about climate change, it's no longer a scientific debate. The climatologists are
in consensus.
There's real consensus there. It's just political debate.
Dr. Patz, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you, Kate.
Dr. Jonathan Patz is director of the Global Health Institute at UW-Madison. He's a professor and the John P. Holton Chair in Health and the Environment. He served as a lead author for the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, and that's the organization that shared the Nobel Peace Prize with Al Gore in 2007. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. It's The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.